It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running. It is the third day. It is 6.03 p.m. Jesus, the numbers are stacked up there together. It's the 29th day of August 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you're feeling like getting all froggy and jumping into the madcap multimedia real-time wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yep, just pick yourself out a screen name and a password at the chat room link at headon.live, and you will be lickety-split. See, I'm having to restart things, and lo and behold, there's the, yeah. That's what happens with the autoplay. Question is, where's the damn link? There we go. You'll be met and greeted by the likes of Steve from New York and others wandering around here in short order. You'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has chosen to fold space this evening and become Man Cave. And back on his triumphant return, of course, pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy. There's Heather wandering into the room here early on at the beginning of the program. All are welcome. You know, all who aren't right-wing POSs, Trump pansies, maggots, you know, that sort of thing. If you are of goodwill and you enjoy some witty banter, well, doggone it, come on over to the chat room. Let's see, did I do the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. So that's out of the way. And let me simply say that this evening's program, just as yesterday's program was, as tomorrow's program will be, and as the Friday's program will be, are all brought to you by the sponsor members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Yes, we have a small handful, nowhere near the 400 that we someday dream of having, but we have a small handful of people who keep the program going. Yes. So that would mean, this being the 29th, there are none to thank as of this day. But because of the subscribers, we're able to have fundraising free radio for the last part of the month. I wish it had been a full week, but a little short. But thank you. to each and every one of our subscribers. They are thanked throughout the course of the course of the month on the days in which on their subscriptions occur. Thanks go out also, of course, to our Patreon subscribers. Those subscriptions come out on the first of the month. And that's how we manage to pay, keep the bills paid for about a quarter of the month's bills. Let's see. And with that, with our subscribers, well, we're able to keep the program going month to month to month. Let's see. How about those Patreon subscribers? Let's go ahead and extend thanks there. Thank you to Alec. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Barb. Thank you very kindly to Barbara. Thank you to Brendan. And thank you to David. Thank you to a different David. Thank you very kindly to Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan. Thank you to Irwin. Thank you to Foam Cups. Thank you to Frank. Thanks to Greg. Thanks to our buddy Horst. Thanks to Johan. Thank you to our buddy Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you to Jim. Thank you to John. And thank you to another John. And yet another John again. Thank you very kindly. That last John would be Johannes, our buddy Johannes out in Colorado. Thank you to Karen in California. Thank you to Carl. Thank you to Kimberly. Thank you to Peggy in the sandbox. Thank you to Marty. Thank you to a different Marty. Thank you to Matthew. Thank you very kindly to Nick and Olds 394. Thank you to Patrick in Germany. Thank you to Ron with an H. And thank you to Rico in DeBerg. Thank you to Robin with a Y. Thank you to Rocky. Thank you to Scott. Thank you to Sonny. And thank you to Steve in New York. Thank you to Stephen, who is not Steve in New York, but a member of the fraternity of Steve. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Terrace in California. Thank you to the Nubian. And thank you to Thomas. And here's one for you. Thank you to the Union of Concerned Scientists. How about that? Had a note from the Nubian earlier today. A very kind note. Saying, thanks for the real talk, Bob. It's just what the people need. Never have I heard a non-black person spitting so much real game and truth. Does me good to hear a white brother breaking down the unadulterated truth and reality of racism, past, present, and potential future. Signed, the Nubian. Well, thank you. Thank you very, very kindly. I see the key to understanding racism, endemic and inherent. I see the key to that as being a willingness to have mind and eyes and ears open to history. Because if you know history, you cannot evade the racism that permeates our history. You can't. It's layered on like gravy on mashed potatoes. And just like gravy on mashed potatoes, it tends to get all over the place. And unlike gravy on mashed potatoes, it ain't good. So that's where I stand on it all. That's why I see what I see. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa pointing out preaching truth from both pulpits. In the Cathedral of Common Sense, 555. And, of course, it's true. It is absolutely true that it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The final one of the month, the deacons get the night off, and The little old blue-haired ladies knew that the deacons were going to get the night off, so they were merciless. They rendered the deacons immobile, is what they did. Yeah, about 2 days ago, the little old blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen started brining entire chickens just in those big plastic buckets. They made brine, and they seasoned, they just hammered it with Cajun spice and dropped the birds in, set them in the walk-in, left them there for a couple of days. And then today, well, the little old blue-haired men put them on the grill, propped up by beer cans. Based on the behavior of the little old blue-haired men and some of the little old blue-haired ladies, I'm guessing I know how they got the beer cans empty for the beer can chicken. Oh, yeah, yeah. But it was delicious, and there was a chicken for every deacon. And the sounds of deacons knocking out an entire flock of chickens, well, it wasn't pretty. It just wasn't pretty. There was carrot salad to go with it, and some light summertime vegetables, some squash and some zucchini and onion, and all sautéed together. The deacons barely touched that, but oh my God, the dessert table! Yeah, the dessert table. They did that. They did three different versions of that four-layer pie stuff, you know, with the cream cheese mixture and the baked crust with the nuts in it, and the whipped cream, and then in the middle there was one with chocolate, one with lemon, and one with butterscotch. Not a crumb was left. The deacons aren't even in the cathedral, brethren and sistren. They are not in the cathedral at all. They're all just wiped out in an endorphin rush. What's that other chemical in the brain that you get at it, but just barely mobile at all. Because again, they knew they've got the night off thanks to our subscribers. So, brethren and sistren, without no deacons in the room, and without having to have no offertory prayer, brethren and sistren, I'm just going to call upon the minister of music to step forward right here, right now, and lead us in a hymn to get us started. Amen and amen.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world, the fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will! Empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, Cahaba, Sahara, Subaru, Bibi Rebozo. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sistren. Welcome, one and all, to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Ha! Glory, hallelujah, amen. I'm so glad that you could join us here in the cathedral today. And hallelujah, amens to everybody listening via the radio and to the shut-ins at home. Hallelujah, amen. Praise his holy name. Glory. I am calling upon you right now, brethren and sistren, even with that big old belly full of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, Fellowship Hall, goodness, holding you down. I'm calling on you, help, amen, to get up onto your feet. Get up off of your seat, glory, and scrunch and screech and wiggle and waggle and waddle. And come on out from betwixt the pews and watch where you stick your rear end so because of the pews and walk without rhythm so you won't attract the worms. And come on down that blood-red aisle and fall, amen, glory, upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Aggravated Agnostic, Animated Animist, Munificent Mufti Bob Kincaid. And it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Glory, we're waiting for a miracle this evening. Well, it wasn't actually a miracle. Actually, it was entirely predictable. Miracles are no fun if you can predict them. I mean, if the goddess of irony is working so hard that she's hanging curveballs over the plate, waiting to see if anybody will swat them into the cheap seats, it really doesn't qualify as a miracle. What am I talking about? Well, we can file all of this under, that didn't take long. And what I'm talking about, of course, is what happened less than 12 hours. No, really. Less than 12 hours after Florida got its brand new Republican nominee for governor, Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis had pretty much of a cakewalk to get the Republican nomination for governor in the state of Florida. It was not nearly as easy for Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, to get the Democratic nomination. There were like seven people in the Democratic field. It was basically a two-person race between Ron DeSantis and some guy named Putnam, who I heard described earlier today as having been running for governor of Florida since he was in high school. You know those types. It was less than 12 hours after Ron DeSantis had won his primary in Florida last night. Well, let's express this in, mathematical terms. He went from zero to Klansman in less than 12 hours. No, really. This isn't even a close case. It's absolutely ridiculous that Mayor Gillum, being African American, had to be subjected to a racist comment from the Republican nominee less than 12 hours after the two candidates were pretty much faced off against one another. I wish I was kidding. Sadly, I'm not kidding. It was It was earlier today when Ron DeSantis, who is a major maggot and was endorsed by Julius Geezer, who won going away, appeared, of course, on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, broadcast mouthpiece of American racism. Nothing surprising there. He's a Republican. They're going to have him, you know, on Fox. So far, we're good. I mean, not really good, but it's just, well, it's the world spinning properly on its axis. And then, well, then in the course of being offered an opportunity to say something about his opponent, well, Ron DeSantis went full maggot. And it's you can't miss it. There's no way to talk around it. You know, I've said for a long time that the Republicans are just so tired of political correctness. Remember what Kelly Ward, who lost her primary last night, giving the Republicans at least a better than even chance of retaining the Senate seat, being vacated by Parthian rubber-tipped arrow sharpshooter Jeff Flake. Kelly Ward tweeted, "Political correctness is a cancer." Right. It had to happen. It was as predictable as the sunrise. Maggots gonna maggot. So there it was on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. And it was live. And it was just Ron DeSantis being a maggot.
Well, look, I mean, this is Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, you know, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But, I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is.
You heard it. I wasn't even going to fool with the hockey puck warning, because there's nothing surprising about this. And at this point, as infuriating as it is to hear a Republican behaving like a Republican, there's no shock in it.
Work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there's any sort of justice in the universe, remember, the moral arc is of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Well, let's hope it bends downright into a parabolic arc toward justice for Ron DeMaggots. And that he isn't allowed to go anywhere or say anything without being called Ron Monkey This Up DeMaggots. But here's the thing. Like I said, it was entirely foreseeable and predictable to those who maintain an open spirit to the word of prophecy that comes down from the goddess of irony. Because it's been waiting for about a week or so. Just as that tongue-speaking preacher trying to weaponize his congregation last week was a prediction of what we would have this week from Donald J. Trump in terms of predicting the violence. You know, Trump told a bunch of religion industry grifters and grafters and hustlers and little boy rapists and whatnot that if the Republicans don't win in November, that there will be violence. Well, the fact of the matter is he was asserting that there would be violence from the so-called left. Ha! What left? Well, we understand that the veiled threat that was involved there, that the violence, if the Republicans don't win, will come from the Republicans, the maggots, the people who have all the effing guns. Well, a few days ago, the goddess of irony provided us a foretaste. She provided almost a road sign to where Ron DeMaggots would go, Ron Monkey This Up DeMaggots would go today. And by the way, some news outlets got it right. One panel on one news channel said that, might as well have used that word. And it's the absolute truth. Because maggots yearn to use that word. How do I know? Because I have proof. We go now to noted perceiver of lesbian softball players, Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. He used to be called Coach by people that he taught to play football. Now he's Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, and he's got himself a tasty little tax-free Dodge in which he opines about things like demons and lesbian softball players who were not able to corrupt his two softball-playing daughters because they did not have big posteriors and resisted the demonic urge to wear their hair short. Completely oblivious to the fact that he had been possessed by the goddess of irony, though. About a week ago, 5 days ago, Dave Daubenmeyer fell into the goddess's hands. And he gave us this. Warning, this is all about that word. So, here we go.
They call it the N-word. Have you ever heard anything more stupid than that? The N-word? What is the N-word? Well, the N-word is where they call somebody nigger, right? Or niggardly. Remember a guy got in trouble for being called niggardly? Jared, that'd be a good word.
Time out. Okay, Jack? Okay? niggardly, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, has no relation etymologically whatsoever, because I remember when this was a controversy and running to the dictionary over it back then, because Flush Flemball, the oxymoron, tried to make something out of it. That word actually comes because, yeah, there are hardly any original words in English. I guess this is one of those moments of Bob Kincaid and the art of word knowing. That word, niggardly, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, bears no relationship to the Latin word from which the racial slur arises. The first one comes from Swedish. Ja, svenska. Whereas the racial and ethnic slur comes from Latin. To this day, and there is no slur involved in it whatsoever, except for, say, the tittering little kids who learn Latin in 7th or 8th or 9th grade down south, who learn that the Latin word for black is N-I-G-E-R. Niger. We know that's how it's pronounced because we were given pronunciation rules by ancient Roman and Latin writing authors. Niger. This is probably not the time for the whole how a racial slur, if we're going to use the word race, how that develops. Suffice to say, niggardly bears no relationship to that whatsoever. But Dave Daubenmeyer is caught firmly in the grasp of the goddess of irony, and there's no in the grasp rule where the goddess is concerned. But he wants to use that word, and I don't mean niggardly, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, so badly he can taste it. Let's go back and pretend I didn't interrupt.
They call it the N-word. Have you ever heard anything more stupid than that? The N-word? What is the N-word? Well, the N-word is where they call somebody nigger, right? Or niggardly. Remember a guy got in trouble for being called niggardly? Jared, that'd be a good word. Let's go to Webster's 1828 dictionary, Jared, and look up the word niggardly. Niggardly. Niggardly.
I bet the fucker can't even spell it.
Niggardly means covetous or avaricious. Sordidly. Parsimonious. Boy, I got to get out my thesaurus. Extremely sparing of expense. Sparing, wary, costly, avoiding profusion. Niggardly basically means cheap. Okay? Somebody's niggardly, they're cheap. Now, Jared, look up nigger. Is nigger on there? Does Webster even have a word nigger? Wasn't even a word. Nigger. No. Niggered is what? Niggered is narrow. To haggle. To be sordidly parsimonious. I'm going to look that up.
By the way, they actually proudly put it up on the screen because they've got all kinds of fancy-ass equipment they can do that with. And they've looked up N-I-G-G-A-R-D. No, really. Not kidding. But then again, this is pass the salt with Dave Daubenmeyer, not let's learn to spell with Dave Daubenmeyer. At this rate, I will not be surprised if they, in trying to describe what, in trying to give the title of their program, it turns out to be piss the salt, which would ruin your salt. And that would piss you off if you were cheap and didn't like spending extra money on salt.
Coming up. Exhibit analogies similar to those of wretched, wreck, and haggle. A miser. A person meanly close and covetous, a sordid wretch who saves every cent or spends grudgingly.
See, also Scotsman.
Never mind. Here's the question we have to ask ourselves on this prayer meeting Wednesday. Is this on purpose or is he that stupid? And it's a tough call. This guy is from Ohio. It was Michael in Madison who gave us the lowdown on this guy many years ago. In fact, Michael's dad took Dobbin, my coach Dave, down, I do believe, if I recall the story correctly. This guy was an educator. He was a coach. I, for instance, was taught Algebra 2 by a guy who coached baseball at my high school. And while he had a propensity for occasionally eating chalk by mistake, he did a pretty fair job of teaching me Algebra 2 because I passed it in summer school with a damned A, whereas I had flunked it during the regular school year because I was busy getting high outside back behind the field house, and freshly stoned is no way to learn Algebra 2. Not much good for learning Algebra 1 either. And proof that a youth misspent in smoke and dope will have long-term consequences. I wound up an English major and not a math major. So, as an educator, there's no way this guy's running around reading in the Bible and stuff like that all the time, so we know he reads words. How well is subject to debate based upon the content of this here audio. Sorry, thought I heard something. But he's got to know how to spell that ethnic slur. Even the dumbest Klansman knows how to spell his favorite racist ethnic slur, racial slur. So I tend to fall on the side of this is intentional. Also, because he's an evangelical Christian, that means he is prone to near constant lying. It's in him and it's in the situation, as Robert Frost once observed. So I'm guessing he's trying to lead whoever it is that tunes into his program astray. And he's trying to encourage them to take up his own brand of white evangelical racism, because white evangelical Christianity is inherently racist. After all, evangelicalism, much of it, rises up out of the Southern Baptist tradition, and the Southern Baptist Church was founded, it became the Southern Baptist Church because of racism. What did I say earlier about if you know history, you will know racism? Yeah. God, I hate to do this, but stand by a minute, please. Sorry about that. I thought there was somebody at the fabulous studio door. But back to what we were talking about. I think this is on purpose. I think the purpose of this is to give white evangelicals the cover they need to use the word they so desperately yearn to use.
That's a niggard. That's niggard. That's right. To be a niggard. Right? See what they've done to us with words?
They do things to us with words. Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears.
Wait, do it again, Jared. 1828. Please look that up for me again. Nigger. N-I-G-G-E-R.
Oh, he does know how to spell it.
Wow. Wonder where that came. Wonder whose idea that was. And I wonder, huh? Demony, family.
Hillary Clinton's, maybe? Because then he says, look up N-I-G-G-E-R, and he says it's not in the 1828 Webster's Dictionary. Well, there are words that don't appear in the dictionary. Yeah. Oh, by the way, a note coming from Lee in New York. Hey, Bob, stop telling us to stand by. At least give us elevator music. Establishment shill. Neoliberal. Sorry, I added those last two. They just, they fit so well. James in Illinois says, I had no idea. I didn't know there was a correlation. I'm bad with math, too. Oh, I get the numbers right. It just takes a while. I can knock out a paragraph, however, almost as fast as I can talk. We'll see what happens when you don't pay attention to your maths. You're dependent on words. And then you wind up being absolutely gobsmacked by a Swedish derivative. Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego says, old Dave seems to really be getting off by repeatedly using anything close to the N-word. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble again. This from Ron in Raleigh. Bob. No. It's been a while, however. You've taken a fine upstanding maggot out of context. Just because a white man uses monkey in relation to a black man doesn't mean he's a filthy racist. Except for it kind of does. A lot. Meanwhile, Lee in New York says, I'm glad he used the word monkey for the simple reason that he spoke in broadcast acceptable terms. If he said any bleeped word, he could deny what he said. But by choosing a slur that can be broadcast, there is no doubt of what he spoke. And I will add, no doubt of who he is. Meanwhile, back to old Dave.
Can I tell you something? I remember one time when I was in high school, I was a pretty good athlete. I was a small guy. And I was reading an article in the paper. I was in high school. I was reading an article in the paper. I just scored a bunch of points in a basketball game. And the guy said something about diminutive Dobbenmeyer. So diminutive Dobbenmeyer then took control of the game, something like that.
I'm guessing he didn't say he took control of the game, but that's, you know, and I'm only guessing that. I don't have access to the newspaper article of years gone by, but just because, you know, we're talking about Dave Dobbenmeyer here, and he's a professional liar.
I'm in high school, right? Sophomore in high school. I said to my mom, what's that mean, diminutive?
And Mama said, Dave, you've made it already all the way to 10th grade, and you don't know what diminutive means? Well, how about that? I gave birth to a moron. That's what Mother Dobbenmeyer said.
And she said, small.
You'll notice that Mother Dobbenmeyer didn't go into an Art of Word-Knowing lecture in which she explained... In which she led young Dave through an intellectual process whereby he could figure out what diminutive meant on his own. She could have said, well, Dave, think of other words that begin with those letters, D-I-M. Wait, no, not dim, Dave. Son, we know that you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but no, that's not what I'm talking about. Now, how about diminish? Diminish, Dave. Do you know what diminish means? To which Dave replied, nigger? No, Dave, no. See, that's a problem that Dave Daubenmeyer has had all his life, the profound and abiding urge to use racial slurs in a sort of Tourette's-like fashion. No, Dave. Diminish, to make less. Never mind. It means small, Dave. It means small. And I have to use small words because you have a small brain.
You know what? I'd rather they'd call me a nigger. I didn't look at myself as small. What do you mean small?
Well, small, Dave, means when you look at the other basketball players and they're all 6 foot tall and you're 5 foot one, that's what small means, Dave. And you know what? When all the other basketball players are 6 foot tall and you're 5 foot one, it does not mean you're that word that has two G's, an I, an R, an E, and an N and isn't ginger. It doesn't mean that, Dave. But then again, in Dave's world, softball means lesbian. Yeah. Brother Deacon Ace is saying, tell you what, I'd like to monkey DeSantis's face up with my aluminum slugger. Now, Brother Deacon Asa. Now, that is not proper deacon behavior. Brother Usher Steve in New York, diminutive, diminutive. I think the word dim fits this fucker. Yes, it does, it does, it does. But so does racist. I wonder if he looked at Mother Daubenmeyer. Ma Daub. Ma Dib. For he is the Kwisatz Haderach. No. Stupid is the mind killer. Stupid is the little death that brings total oblivion. Oh, yeah, I know. Poor Mother Daubenmeyer. It couldn't have been easy.
In high school, I said to my mom, Mom, what's that mean, diminutive? And she said, small. You know what? I'd rather they'd call me a nigger. I didn't look at myself as small. What do you mean small? Why are they able to get away with that? Why can they call me small? Why can they call me fat? Why can they call me hick? Why can they call... And I can't say... I can't say the N-word. Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Right.
See what they've done to us? See what they've done to us?
Yeah, what they've done to us. They... Poor little white maggots. They took a perfectly good Swedish slur away from them.
I know.
As Brother Usher Steve points out, that word. Thanks, Obama. But like I said, you just have to be open to this stuff. And you'll figure it out. It was Friday when I saw this clip. And I thought, well, I'll save that for prayer meeting Wednesday. And I was going to run that today one way or the other. But then, because she is a good goddess, the goddess of irony handed us the actual Republican nominee for governor of the state of Florida, who, unlike Dave Daubenmeyer, was not willing to go all the way, but was certainly willing to utilize a descriptive word which has a long and ignoble history of being used as a slur against African-American people. Monkey.
Work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases.
Yeah. Monkey this up. Monkey this up. Les points out, concerning the Trumpsters on Andrew Gillum's win last night, I called it, and it didn't even take a full 24 hours. No, this is a record. They went, the Republican nominee for governor went zero to Klansmen in less than 12 hours. And, of course, immediately, the word monkey was no sooner out of Ron DeMaggett's mouth then two things happened. One, the for-profit media moved into crisis response mode. And immediately began to make certain arguments about how it's not racist. Now, you have to be utterly and completely and totally devoid of any knowledge of race in America to make that argument. But out front there, having been credited by Ron DeMaggett with being key and crucial to his victory in Florida, Mark Levin, the man with a voice made for print, tweeted,
"The disgusting left-wing smear machine already in full attack mode against Ron DeSantis in Florida."
Mm-hmm. No. It's not full attack mode. That's called journalism, reporting that he used a slur used by racists. Meanwhile, Ben Shapiro, another idiot, said that the headline is wildly misleading, that DeMaggett's used a racist slur. It's being described as a dog whistle, which is exactly what it is. Taking a different tack over at that website that rhymes with light and fart, a guy named Joel Pollack said, "Attacks on a candidate are fair game, right or wrong. When you accuse him, her of using a dog whistle, though, you're attacking the voters." In other words, what we're saying is that the monkey comment was used as a dog whistle to equally racist or more so Florida voters, which there are in a multitude in that state. Eric Erickson, he said that it wasn't smart of Ron DeSantis to say what he said. He said, "But I really doubt it means as the media proclaims." David French just straight up said, "Well, hey, he wasn't being racist." And then the argument was put forward that, well, he uses that term all the time, because a spokesperson had made that claim. Monkey this up is a term that DeSantis frequently uses. Well, that sent folks who are good at researching previous statements by politicians out to search and find out. So the folks at Media Matters jumped on it. And lo and behold, there's no instance available in the public record of Ron DeSantis ever having said, monkey this up, in a public setting where his words would have been taken down or recorded for posterity. They even used the Nexus search engine for it. They searched all over Twitter. He's never used it at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. He's never used it on Fox Business. He's never used it in other media appearances. And Nexus gathers all of that. He's never used monkey this up in an interview with a national newspaper or with a newspaper in Florida. It's never appeared in his personal or campaign Twitter account. Searching via Google? Nope. No results there either. He has used the word monkey did pop once. And we need to be clear about this. It is possible, because I want to be fair, it is possible to use the term monkey without it being a racial slur. In 2017, Ron DeSantis complained that Democrats were trying to throw a monkey wrench into the Trump agenda. I don't think there is a racist connotation to monkey wrench. Nor is there a racist connotation to say, hey, because, I mean, I've said this to my own kids. One of them in particular. Hey, don't monkey with that. Because to monkey with actually means to mess with something about which you have no knowledge whatsoever. As in, oh, I don't know. Don't monkey with the carburetor on that engine, boy, or the damn thing will never run. Let's pretend that I'm just speaking to my son. There's no racism in that. But when you are talking about your brand new opponent in the Florida governor's race, and your brand new opponent is an African-American man, a respected African-American man who has done a good job as mayor of Tallahassee, and you know that the difference in victory may be your ability to inspire the various and sundry mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers and Confederate flag-flying racists of your state to go to the polls, then monkey this up has only one meaning. And DeSantis, like I said, he won his primary handily. But we live in a time when elections are determined on single percentage points. It's sort of the same thing that happened with the Trump phenomenon, with the Trump election in November 2016. No, everybody who voted for Trump may not have been a racist. But they got in bed with them. And you can argue that and you can make a credible argument that racist neo-Nazi Klansman vote was enough to push him over the top and get him the Electoral College victory. when he lost the popular vote by more than 3 million. And so, hopefully, Monkey This Up will become Ron DeSantis's middle name. Now, I said two things happened. The other thing that happened is that within minutes, seconds after Donald J. Trump learned that Ron DeSantis had used a racial slur in describing his Democratic opponent, well, this happened.
No, I didn't hear it.
Andrew Dorsey said that it's not time to monkey around with the economy down in Florida.
No, I didn't hear it. Honestly, yeah, I didn't hear that, Jim. I mean, I've been actually working on the deal with Canada, so I have not heard it. I tell you what, I know Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is extraordinary. Harvard.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's extraordinary. Now, whoever the guy is, and I think it may be, well, I don't know, he calls him Jim. Screwed up and actually gave Trump the wrong phrase, because he didn't say monkey around with, he said monkey this up. Which, incidentally, is a bizarre phrase. You know, just a minute ago I was talking about how, hey, don't monkey around with that, doesn't have a racist connotation. That's not entirely true. If you use it in reference to a person of color, it does. Because of the ancient and noxious history of the term. But generally speaking, monkey around is not the same as monkey this up, because, among other things, monkey this up is a weirdly not usual construction. I'm sure you know what I mean. But yeah, Ron DeSantis is extraordinary, according to the racist in chief. So I think the lines are pretty fairly drawn. It's going to be the racists versus the non-racists in the state of Florida. And for anyone who claims, well, I ain't no racist. If you vote for Ron DeSantis in November, you are getting in bed with a racist. You are voting alongside racists. And you will be indistinguishable from racists in the final tally. The only way to not be affected by this is to not vote for Ron DeSantis. You can vote for the Libertarian candidate, maybe. If you're a maggot. Or if you feel like you just really need to not vote for Mayor Gillum. But if you vote for Ron DeSantis, you're voting for a guy who uses racist coded language. Now, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda tried to get out after it. They couldn't get out in front of it, but they got out after it
We do not condone this language and wanted to make our viewers aware that he has since clarified his statement.
And then read the clarification on the air, whatever that may have been. Oh, I'm sorry, this is it. Communications director for Ron DeMaggot said he was obviously talking about Florida not making the wrong decision to embrace the socialist policies that Andrew Gillum espouses. To characterize it as anything else is absurd. Florida's economy has been on the move for the last 8 years, just like the red tide. Oh, no, that's not in there. And the last thing we need is a far-left Democrat trying to stop our success. Well, the Republicans aren't going to try to do anything to stop sea level rise. That was made illegal by the guy who's in the governor's office now. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, winning the battle of the press releases, Andrew Gillum spokesman Jeff Bergen said, as we say in Tallahassee, bless his heart. Ooh, that stings. Ooh, none of the little pile of ash left. God love him, he can't help it. Bless his heart. Let's all go have some crystal hot sauce on some vanilla ice cream. Bless his heart. Yeah. Oh, that burns. That burns bad. Meanwhile, Andrew Gillum proved himself a formidable opponent. This was his response to having been referred to as a monkey.
November opponent Ron DeSantis, as mentioned, was on Fox News Channel this morning. And since then, there has been a bubbling on the internet. It's trending. It's at the top of most political websites. Something that he said to our host, Sandra Smith, regarding the upcoming election. I want to let our viewers hear what was said.
So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state.
It was the monkey this up part. Sir, your response.
Yeah, that part wasn't lost on me. It's very clear that Mr. DeSantis is taking a page directly from the campaign manual of Donald Trump. But I think he's got another thing coming to him. If he thinks that in today's day and age, Florida voters are going to respond to that level of derision and division, they're sick of it. What we're trying to offer in this race
was
is
that
a
racist
north star
or a
where we want to go as a state.
Was that racist or a figment of speech?
Well, in the handbook of Donald Trump, they no longer do whistle calls. They're now using full bullhorns.
And that was a bullhorn?
And what I've got to say about that is that we've got to make sure that we stay focused, I think, on the issues that confront everyday people. I'm not going to get down in the gutter with DeSantis and Trump. There's enough of that going on. I'm going to try and stay high and try to talk about what the North Star and the future is for the state of Florida and the people of this state. And I think that's what people want. They're just so sick of this divisive politics that have been coming out of Washington and has now infiltrated the politics of this state vis-a-vis Ron DeSantis. He's very clear on day one that he's willing to go down to the gutter. In our opinion, we're going to win this race because we're going to stay high and we're going to remind Floridians of what the true spirit of the American way is. And that's what I'm going to do as governor, help us reach that that high mark as a state so that we're a leader again and not a back-of-the-pack state.
I got 30 seconds left. What'd you say to your kids last night?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Shep, they were with me as we saw the results coming in, and I don't mind sharing with you that they had zero interest as they rolled in. We just enjoyed each other, loved on each other. And I'm so blessed.
All the best. Thank you again. Thanks for coming on Fox News Channel. The news continues right after this.
That's how you do it. That's pro. That's impressive. So the lines are effectively drawn. And we know what the... We know what the contest is going to be. but what a line. I'm not going to get down in the gutter with DeSantis and Trump, because they're one and the same. A vote for DeSantis is a vote for Trump. Trump is endorsed by blah blah blah. You get it. And yeah, what Andrew Gillum said is true. It's very clear that Mr. DeSantis is taking a page directly from the campaign manual of Donald Trump. And Andrew Gillum straight up wouldn't say that it was a racist statement, and good for him, that's smart. Leave it to people, I mean, yeah, our tiny little community, but leave it to folks like me to make that determination. Or, you know, by the time they're on air, I'm sure whatever little etymology that I have given, I'm sure Rachel Maddow will do 20 minutes on where the word comes from and the history of the word monkey in the racist rhetoric of the United States of America. Because it's all very real. Now, that's not going to be all there is to the program this evening. But that it's unavoidable. And, yeah, I put it at the top of prayer meeting Wednesday because of the nexus. Remember, the key, if DeSantis is to win, the key to his victory will be white evangelicals. So we're going to learn something about them, too. We'll probably learn the same thing about them that we learned in the Alabama special election for Senate. When 67% of white evangelical women, having found out that, well, Roy Tola Moore was a pervert, went ahead and voted for him because he was a Christian pervert. And 72% of white evangelical men, having found out that Roy Tola Moore was a pervert, went ahead and voted for him because he was a Christian pervert. There is no reason to think, and especially up in the northern panhandle and the northern portion of Florida, that the same dynamic will not be at work come November. So what we have here, I hope, is a tremendous motivation. Because to stop a maggot like DeSantis will take a heroic effort. And it will also, well, it'll also, it would mark a great change in a place like Florida, which has such a long, agony-laden and bloody history of racism and lynching. Look up Rosewood. Alexander asks a question. Why is it that folks that just happen to look like Brother Gillum are expected to be tolerant of racist inference coming from white folks? But that's never the case if the racist dynamic was reversed. Well, Jesus, the racist dynamic isn't even reversed. And aggrieved white people are screaming, reverse racism, all over the country. And it's even bled over a little bit here into the Horn Family Community Congregation. I've shared some emails with you.
Why aren't you telling the stories about the people getting shot in Chicago? They're just as racist as we are.
Alexander asks, is that not racism in and of itself? Damn skippy it is, expecting a guy to be subjected to racism and then just sort of say, well, we're going to go high. It's blatantly racist, says Alexander. It's a roundabout way of essentially saying, stay in your place. Yeah. Step off. You eyeballing me? Yeah. So, it's not playing well out, in, except among, you know, maggot media. But in the wider for-profit media, people seem to recognize the inherent racism for what it is. And then, of course, there's this. There's a page on Facebook for a teabagger group. Failed Arizona Senate candidate and please stay in Arizona and never come back to West Virginia, Kelly Ward, is also an admin on the site. There's 52 admins and moderators for the Tea Party Facebook group. I'm not going to mention the name. But DeSantis is an admin, not just a mod, an admin. And that page is covered up with racist and deep state conspiracy horse shit. Oh, there's some real Lulus there. And it, what a surprise. If DeSantis is asked about it, of course, he'll say, "Well, I don't even know what the Facebook is. Where do you go to buy a Facebook? Is that kind of like a catalog?" Of course, I'm imputing to him a redneck accent that he doesn't have. Because after all, he went to Harvard, Yale. Brilliant guy. Extraordinary. Looks so good in that pointy hat. Yeah. So let's go ahead and take a break. Like I said, there's more stuff. Let's check in the mail too. Yeah, I thought about that. The end of Howard Cosell was brought about by a monkey comment. Now, apparently, there was some background to suggest that he spent. Or not spent, but had used the phrase "little monkey" with regard to his grandkids. But that still did not excuse the use of it to describe a full-grown male African-American athlete. In regard to the term "monkey wrench," how do you know that "monkey wrench" is not a racist term in the hardware community? I doubt that lugnut is complimentary. Well played. Well played, Lee. Yeah, that's worth a cowbell. James out in Illinois. How long will it take before the wingnuts to claim that the golem hates white people? Hates his white people. He's obviously a reverse racist. And he's golem.
Yes. Precious.
Marty, meanwhile, notes the best incentive to go out and buy a Surface, apparently. Caligula's Trumpus uses an iPad. Stop that. I can't. There's an age breakout in the demographic between iOS items and Android. The younger hippity-dippity people prefer Android, whereas us geezers like the simplicity of the iOS interface. couple of things, says Brother Usher Steve. What Andrew Gillum did was say, bless his little heart, he can't hip it. This also reminds me of Bill Clinton, who could say something without actually saying it. It's the old adage, diplomacy is being able to tell a person to go to hell and make them enjoy the trip. Exactly. Well, that's the whole nature of the passive-aggressive qualities of Southern English. She tried to bake cornbread again, and it came out, and I swear if she baked enough of them, you could use them to build a house. It's like bricks. Bless her heart. If you get bless your hearted, there's a difference between bless your heart, that's so sweet, or bless your heart, you're so kind, and bless her heart. The latter form is most often followed by she can't help it. Right. Steve, for having been raised in Ohio, and remember, Ohio may be partially above the Mason-Dixie line, but it's chock full of necks. Steve speaks it pretty damn good. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, you need to understand, calling a white person racist is racist. Marvelous catch 22. That's some catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. Silent R. Lamar says, monkey wrench is a slur if the monkey wrench is owned by a black man. Some nuance there. Meanwhile, Flavio merely suggests, how about retiring the word niggardly entirely in American English and just using miserly, stingy, or cheap? A lot of words fall into disuse, desuetude, good word. Others become obsolete. Well, it really doesn't get much use unless a racist wants to haul it out to prove that, well, what happened in the first hour of the program.
Right.
Yeah, I know you meant Gillum, James in Illinois, but autocorrect turned it into Gollum, and, well, frankly, it won't be long before... Well, it ain't racist to call him Gollum. See how it works?
Yeah.
So we're almost to the halfway point of this Prayer Meeting Wednesday edition of The Horn. We got two phone lines for you to choose from if you would like to get into the program. The brand new one, which you may not have written down yet and doesn't spell anything, is area code 304-640-2829. 304-640-2829. And that gets you to the stress line, which Scott in San Diego proved last night works entirely acceptably well. Then, of course, there's the other line, 304-574-8178, that you probably already do know. And there's the toll-free number, which comes into the same place as the other number, 8178. And that's from anywhere, toll-free from anywhere, the United States, Mexico, and Canada. We'd love to hear from our Mexican contingents, brothers and sisters on the horn. I don't think we have any, but it would be cool if we did. That number, that toll-free number is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then, of course, from anywhere on the planet, for free even, where you can, as long as you can get past the firewall, you can always use Skype. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B. KINCAIDHORN, Bob Kincaid Horn. And it's all ever so easy to get out there. Steve, with an important note, going to Flavio's note about things falling out of usage. F-A blank blank O-T. Steve notes, nobody's using that word to speak of a bundle of sticks anymore. Or even that quintessential English usage, meaning a cigarette. No. Knew a lady from England once. She has since gone on. And I'd say she was 15, 20 years older than me. She did still use that term. But she was as liberal as the day is long. And she actually had no idea of its usage in American idiom. She would let me bum up from you, she would say to me. But yeah, that's fallen into disuse and needs to stay out of it. Of course, if you asked Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, he'd say, "See what they've done to us." Elbert in Rhode Island, back during the Jim Crow era, white people used to have a statue of a black person on their front porch. It was referred to as a porch monkey. That's one of the many uses, one of the many negative and racist uses of that term. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar, engaging in willful gimmick infringement, appears. Bob, you're going to get a letter from Ron's lawyers. I'm telling you, you don't want it. Let them use the N-word, Silent R. Lamar says, if they don't mind getting their ass kicked up and down the road. And so there we are at the halfway portion of the program. This program brought to you by the monthly subscribers to The Horn, and we thank each and every one of them for it. And thanks to everybody who helped us meet the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge put forward every month this year by our buddy Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, and thanks, everybody. This is Conversation Radio. We'll be right back. I'm Bob. I chose that song for a specific reason, and that is because it's a good example of using the term or using the word without and there are no racial connotations to it whatsoever. None. Context is everything. Brother Deacon Asa, by the way, noting, you know you're going to hell for this bumper, don't you? Well, this choice of bumper music will have to take a number. Yeah. Alexander pointing out, in fact, I have Peter Gabriel's discography on my laptop. Listen to it quite often. Yeah. One of the most touching songs, Biko. Jesus. So, nothing racist about that. It's all in the context. And maggots, anybody. Maggots are not too, otne ute aitbre if you one what I mean. But even they should understand you do not use the word monkey in conjunction with a person of color. You don't do that. And it's not like it's a great challenge or that somebody is being linguistically deprived. What the hell's wrong with, we don't need to mess up a good thing? He thinks the Florida economy's so booming great with its red tides and flooding from gentle spring to summertime storms in South Florida. And massive algae blooms across Lake Okeechobee. That's so star-spangled awesome. Say it! There is no way that was not a dog whistle. Anyway, let's run over to the stress line and check in up in Michigan. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Howdy. It's Heather. Haven't heard from you in a while, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while since I've called, but I do listen. I'm pretty Wednesday.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad you do, sister. I am.
Anyway. That remark that Mr. DeSantis made was so uncalled for.
Dare we even say wrong?
No, I was pleased that Gillum did say something, and he was, he was more than professional. He had the right response. I just hope that DeSantis keeps screwing up. So, so much for that.
Well, yeah, and he Andrew Gillum turned it on its head so perfectly by saying, I'm not going to get down in the gutter with Trump and with Trump and DeSantis.
Exactly.
That was perfect. By saying he wasn't getting down in the gutter with him, he slapped him so hard that Trump's old German racist grandpappy probably felt it.
And unfortunately, in my own state, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, in Michigan, the Republican Party isn't hanging in. Well, how shall I say this? They're not all behind the guy that's going to be the Republican candidate for governor, I don't think. The Republicans, how shall I say this? The man who was once attorney general is the Republican candidate. The man who works for the current governor was a candidate. The man who works for the current governor lost the primary. He was supposedly a moderate. when he...
Yeah, but let's remember, moderate in the Republican Party now means doesn't say monkey it up in public.
Right, right. But anyway, what has happened is supposedly in my state, the Republican parties have got a big split. So who knows what's going to happen. But I like the lady who is running. I also like one of the other people who is running. He did not become her running mate. However, if she does win, I hope she's got plans for him. So,
well, somewhere along the way, I hope your governor has a close and personal meeting with Justice for the sake of the people of Flint.
Oh God!
You know, one of his henchmen is facing charges, but he needs to be indicted.
Exactly.
Because it was his policies that drove inexorably toward what happened in Flint.
Well, I told a friend of mine, she is from Detroit, and we talk to each other on Twitter off and on, and one of the things somebody had put up, and she had even put up, was something about the people who were in office in Flint were Democrats at that time. Well, guess what? They really didn't have a whole lot to do with it. The person who told them to do or told them everything would be okay is the Republican candidate for governor right now. So, I'm definitely not voting for him. I wouldn't have voted for him in the first place, but, you know. But, yeah, it's oh, God.
I know.
But I just figured I'd call, say hi, and...
Well, I'm so very glad you did.
All right, I might call next week, too, just for the heck of it.
You know what you can do? You can call most any time you want. We're just that way around here, Heather.
You are a blessing to... Well, I shouldn't say you're a blessing, but you do an awesome job.
Well, thank you. That is mighty, mighty sweet of you, and I do appreciate it.
All right, well, I will talk to you soon, and have a great night.
All right, you take care, Heather. Good to hear from you.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
Bye now. Wouldn't it be lovely if there was a backlash against Republicans all over this country, and we proved that we are a better nation than right now it looks like we are? Wouldn't that be lovely? And wouldn't it be just grand if the Democratic Party, because... And I worry about things like this. There were 7 different contenders, I think, for the Democratic nomination for governor in Florida. Wouldn't it be great if they all, with one voice, rallied around Andrew Gillum and busted their ass and said, let's show America, let's reject the racism of the maggots? I'd feel a lot better about my country. I would. And back over to the other phone line now. Could it possibly be Tracy? Is that you, Tracy?
That would be me.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. between your boy in Ohio and, the coach is from Ohio, yes?
Yes, coach is from, yes.
Okay, he's from Ohio, and then our boy in Florida.
Zero to Klansmen in less than 12 hours.
This is a root toot kind of day for us black folks, isn't it?
It is a cotton picking wonder, Tracy.
Cotton picking, oh yes, oh my God! I mean, I'm listening when I was driving
when you played the clip, and I'm sitting there trying to keep my head from exploding.
Oh, what, Coach Dave?
Yes. I'm like, no. Wait, really? I mean, like you said, he used that literally just to be able to say nigger.
That was the only reason for the whole clip.
It was the only reason. It's like, okay, we can't say it. And he's like saying that the N, just because the N word, the logic that just because the N word wasn't in that version of the dictionary, or even if it was never in the dictionary, saying that it's not a word because it wasn't in the dictionary doesn't mean to any of mean shit to any of my relatives and myself included that has been called that word in ad nauseum. But it's not a word.
Yeah,
it's not a word.
Conversely, I remember when little redneck children that I grew up with would say they'd use ain't, and they'd be corrected, don't say ain't, it's non-grammatical. And their response would always be, well, it's in the dictionary.
Dictionary.
And you know what? One of these days when I got a little extra money laying around, I need to spring for an OED. You know, the two-volume son of a gun that comes with its own magnifying glass because the print's so tiny.
Oh,
the
yes.
Definitive. Anybody who loves language needs to own an OED. And
those things are not cheap, though, right?
No, they're not cheap. You know, I'd be okay. I'd be okay with a really big, thick Merriam-Webster too, for that matter. But you know, there are words that aren't in the dictionary that are in common usage.
I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, like when you said it's not a word because it's not in the dictionary. I'm just thinking about all those sundowner towns that you, and the sign was saying, "Don't let the sun." What is it? What did they used to say? Don't let the sun.
Ginger, don't let the sun set on you here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's not a word, Bob. It's not a word.
Right. No. No.
It's not a word.
No.
I'm just.
Oh, and you know, the thing is, it comes in context. I mean. Or it has a recent history. You don't have to go all the way back to, say, the ape shot on the pavement cartoon in the New York paper, all the way way back in the misty days of the Obama administration. It was a couple of months ago that Roseanne Barr lost a television show that had become tremendously popular. Because she compared a woman of color to an ape.
Ape, for the Planet of the Apes. That's why, you know, when I sent you the email about the Santas, it's like, do not learn. Not that he's going to lose an election over this, but he just may. Like you said, if people got together and just like you said, to say we are not going to stand for this racism. We are better than this. And so we as Floridians are not, you know, that song, I had this great, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. He was on, was it NPR the other day? Talking about a song, We're Not Gonna Take It. And, you know, that it's become a battle cry for, you know, pick a movement or whatever. It's become a battle cry, that song. And he was saying how when he first started, you know, when Trump first asked him if he could use the song, he said, sure, no problem. You know, he had been on Celebrity Apprentice and stuff like that. And then when he started hearing how Trump, you know, his politics, he called Trump personally and said, you got to stop using my song. Because this is not, that song is not who what your politics or what you're representing is not what I stand for. And so, like, along with him and other people, if we could get more people to say stuff like that and go out in public and on the news and on Twitter and all this and say, we're not going to take this anymore. We're not going to sit here and let our country go to shit because of these people, the small minority of people like you said, just because people voted for Trump doesn't automatically make them a racist. Often never. It makes them, collaborators. If they still are, supporting his views. If they haven't said, you know what, until they say to me or anybody else, yes, I voted for Trump. However, now that he's, been in office and all that, I cannot, in all good conscience, continue to support him. Because until people say that to me, I'm still like, well, then you're a maggot. I got a problem with you. Am I wrong to say that?
No, you're not. And if you get in bed, if you're not one and you get in bed with them, how are we supposed to tell the difference?
How are we supposed to tell the difference? How am I supposed to, how am I supposed to not know? As much as you say that I'm not a racist and all this, well, have you said publicly or your Facebook page and all this, I no longer support Donald Trump? Has anybody in the Republican Party, I'm waiting for those people in the Republican Party to say, I no longer support Trump. Who I want to represent my country. This is not what our country stands for. It's gotten to that point. Because if we don't do something quickly, I am terrified by what is going to happen to this country. That it may get to that point that we are gone so far backwards that we'll never go forward again.
That there's no returning from it. Yeah.
There's no returning from it. I mean, when I heard that Gilliam won, his primary yesterday, I was ecstatic. I was just like, yes. Yeah. So I'm like, I was so excited. Jen just screamed out. Oh, I guess Jen screaming that, since, they're having the public viewing of Aretha Franklin, that they did a wardrobe change. Speaking of Aretha Franklin, I'm pissed. Because Obama is going, everybody figured that President Obama would be at her funeral, but no, he's going to John McCain's funeral. And I'm like, why?
Good question.
I do. Why? I mean, I'm not to do the gallows humor and all that, but Bob, if you had a choice between whose funeral you're going to go to, Aretha Franklin or John McCain, where would you be going this weekend?
Aretha's.
Okay.
Who did more for this country than John McCain by a long shot.
Ever had. Okay. I'm like, okay, Kimba's barking. I have to hide in my office. But
I'm impressed. I'm more than 2,000 miles away, and I about shit myself when she barked.
Yeah, our neighbors are moving, and so she's losing her shit because, they're going back and forth. They would have to have parked their moving van in front of our house. They couldn't have parked it in front of their house. No. They parked it in front of our house. And if anybody even breathes in front of our house, she's a hell of a watchdog. I would feel very sorry for anybody that tried to come into this house when she's at home. But like you said, Aretha Franklin did work for this country, especially as far as civil rights or anything like that, then John McCain would have ever dreamed of. Remember when him and Obama were debating, how did he refer to Obama as that? Was it this one or that one?
That one.
Again, that dog whistle thing. That thing that as black people or a woman.
And it would be beautiful. Obama's too classy to do it because he'll be going high because Michelle will not brook anything else. It would be nice if he walked up to the lectern at the funeral and said, hi, hello, my name is that one. And everybody would laugh. And John McCain's casket might even chuckle.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I read earlier this week that that Obama was going to be there, but I guess it was just, you know, a rumor that he was going to be there. But I'm slightly peeved.
Well, I mean, Obama was slated to give one of the two eulogies.
Right.
Yeah.
So I am peeved that he's going to John McCain's funeral and not to Aretha Franklin.
But you know he has to.
I know he has to.
I mean, McCain asked him in life to do it. But the thing is, I think there's a value in this, Tracy. Because two former presidents are going to eulogize John McCain, and only one of them slimed him by saying that he had a colored baby.
Right.
And of course, there will naturally be some opportunities for high comedy because George W. Bush will be delivering a eulogy.
Right.
And so the language will probably take a whipping, and you know, he'll say something about how McCain proved that fish and people can live can coexist in peace, or you know, one of those Bush things.
Something's going to go wrong. Something's going to go terribly, terribly wrong.
I mean, I was wandering around through some of my really, really old clips. And I ran across this. Let's see.
Block.
Yeah. That what? And hang on. Let's try this one instead.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions. Pluck them or whatever you do with them, you know."
Wait, who was that? Were they drunk?
That's George Bush. let's see. I got a bunch of them.
She's still telling me what to do. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Just a one-finger victory salute.
Wait, what? A one-finger victory salute?
Yeah, somebody flipped him off. Or he flipped somebody off, or, you know. Yeah, this is one of the things that happens when you've been on the air for more than a decade. You get to hang on to things like this.
Almost everyone I've talked to says we're going to move to Houston.
So what I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. Everybody is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
That was Barbara Bush talking about the people who had to live in the Astrodome after Katrina. They were underprivileged anyway, so living in the Astrodome, is working very well for them.
I mean, so this was like moving up for them. Oh, speaking of
now, you don't get to say moving on up. To a deluxe dome stadium.
Stadium in the sky, yeah. Speaking of Katrina, and I meant to talk about, because, you know, if I don't say. Anna DuVernay, I always mess up her name. She did a short film. I think it's being played at the African American History Museum in D.C. But it was called August 28th, A Day in the Life of a People. And I guess she's like you. She's a history geek. And so this date, August 28th, is like throughout this in history has something to do
with black people. So on August 28th was when slavery was, I don't know if it was outlawed in Britain, when it was outlawed in Britain, which made it come, you know, slowly come here. August 28th of when President Obama accepted the nomination for president. August 28th when Emmett Till was murdered. August 28th when Dr. King did the I Have a Dream speech. August 28th when the first song from Motown was played on the radio. It became a hit, the Please Mr. Postman. August 28th, Katrina.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
And, of course, yeah. You mentioned Katrina. That, of course, takes us back to, again to Julius Caesar. You remember last year when Maria slammed the living bejesus out of Puerto Rico and he flew down there and he said...
And gave him paper towels?
Threw paper towels at him and said, well, you know, at least you didn't lose a lot of people in a real disaster like Katrina. Well, almost 3,000. We now know almost 3,000 people died. And what do you get from the White House? You know, crickets.
Crickets. Mm-hmm. 3,000 people. And they still don't have power in most of the country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when I don't know if it's on YouTube yet, but if anybody gets, because it was on, they played it yesterday on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And I saw the previews of it the other day, and I immediately searched for it just so I could record it. And because I have been so, this is what I love about my DVR, because I totally forgot about it. And I came home yesterday late because I had a trip out to Oxnard. And there was on my DVR. I'm like, ooh, yay. This was, you know, because it was just, it's beautifully made, because not only do they talk about those dates, but how she did it was she had different actors portray, you know, people, how people reacted. But the amazing part about it was, instead of actually having dialogue that she wrote, she took poems from black poets like Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston and Maya Angelou. And so she used those poems as the dialogue, you know.
Oh,
and
wow.
The one thing, like, yeah, I'm telling you, it's only 30 minutes long. And if you can find it on YouTube, I was riveted, because it made me, you know, because this, you know, there was this one, I forget the name of the poem by Zora Neale Hurston, and the, it was two people speaking during, with Angela Bassett and another brother. I don't know. He's one of those brothers that I've seen in different stuff, but I've never known his name, kind of thing. He's a character actor, but it was Angela Bassett and him talking during or waiting for King to come out onto the, you know, to the podium. And they use Zora Neale Hurston, and one of the lines on the poem is that I am not tragically Negro. You know, basically that just because I'm black in this country doesn't mean that I feel bad about being black in this country, that I am not going to let this country define who I am as a black man or a black woman. I am not a tragedy just because I'm black.
Right. And you remind me of something that Lee in New York said a few nights ago by email. He said, you know, we are not our ancestors. We are not responsible for what our ancestors did.
Right.
And that's very true. That's why, for instance, what I was talking about, I guess last night, when the framers of the Constitution got together, they said, we are not going to have any more of this corruption of the blood bullshit enshrined in our government. And so they got rid of a taint. That's what it's called, a taint. And, you know, asset forfeiture and everything. But the other side of that coin, and white people largely don't understand this because white people don't know this.
Nope.
If you are African American and you are in the United States, and if you have the typical African American heritage, and it's painful for me as a white guy to even say it, Tracy, because it forces me to confront who and where I come from. And I don't know, and if I can say this in conversation with anybody and hope it has a shred of being understood. The right wing says, oh, white, you know, liberal white guilt. Well, no, not exactly. But when you know history, and you know that every person of color upon whom you set your eye, people who are your friends, people who are perfect strangers to you, people who are decent to you in the course of any given day in business, or people who are assholes to you, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
When you are dealing with a person of color in this country, you are dealing with the descendant of someone whose lives were stolen from them. And if I, as a white person, can be cognizant of that and feel pain and remorse at that, the more so to have that for one's heritage, but moreover, I'm actually working toward a positive here, Tracy. And that is, anything good in this country, anything good in the history of this country is largely good because people of color have set their hand to it.
Yes.
It is inescapable, especially in the South. There's not a goddamn road that runs through the South that was not originally made in its original form, usually out of the trails made by the indigenous people who had been slaughtered by forced labor of people of color.
It didn't sound like great, like the sound, you know, that's the sound of the, working in the chain gang, you know. It was like, ooh, no, chain gangs were not fun.
And you know, as I drove across I-10, going to and coming from New Orleans, I passed a prominent interstate sign telling you, take this exit to go to, oh, I don't know, Beau Rivage, or whatever the fuck French words it is, the mansion of Jefferson Davis. And my stomach flipped. Now, I don't want to burn it down or anything, but I hope they appropriately interpret it at the site. Hello, this was Jefferson Davis's mansion. Everything good about this mansion was made good by people whose lives were stolen by Jefferson Davis.
Thank you.
It was six years ago when I was in Selma. And there are neighborhoods in Selma that are, and there are magnificent antebellum mansions. And I remember sharing a note with our buddy Dr. John, who, among his many talents, is an archaeologist. And I said, it drives me crazy. And I think I sent along a couple of pictures of the mansions. Tourists come through a place like Selma and they say, oh my goodness, look at that magnificent mansion. And they think about the bygone days of the old South. And I look at it, and I smell sweat.
And blood.
And I see blood. And I hear a whip whistling through the air.
And I see mothers being torn from their children being torn from their mothers. because, you know, we're not human. So, you know, why?
This, you know, I don't know if this country can ever have the reckoning that it desperately needs. The pessimistic side of me says it won't.
It won't.
Happen
after the Civil War, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. I mean, if we didn't do like the Germans did after World War II.
And they didn't do that good of a job.
They didn't do that good of a job, but they did a hell of a lot better.
They made an effort.
To be
fair, we made them make an effort. See, one of those historical parallels that you have to take into account. When we started the denazification of Germany, we didn't let a post-war German coup rise up and drive the armies of occupation out of Germany. That is precisely what happened in the South.
After Reconstruction.
To stop Reconstruction. It happened during Reconstruction. And so, when I say that, you know, I'm pessimistic. Well, for instance, there's one word above all others that drives white racists right up a tree. Racists right up a tree. Don't even have to put white in front of it.
No.
White supremacists up a tree.
White nationalists.
And even makes ordinary workaday white folks cringe a little. That word is reparations.
Yeah.
And they don't, and some of them don't even know why it makes them so crazy. But if they had the ability to explain it to you, here's the answer. If the United States of America actually had to pay for the labor that was stolen from generations of people and had to pay it to their descendants, it would probably crash the economy here because the entirety of this country ran on stolen labor for 100 years of nearly 100 years of nationhood, and 200 years of colonial status, and that's why they get the dribbling shits at the mention of the word reparations.
You gotta give yourself a cowbell for that one.
Well, okay, if you insist.
Dribbling.
Because there are these magic things that happen in the law. Lawyers can do math and do it rather well, or else they hire an expert accountant to do it for them. If you took the value and you assigned a minimum wage for that period of time of all the stolen labor of all victims of slavery in the United States, and you applied compounded interest to it, there might not be a poor black person in the entire United States.
No.
And that pisses white people off to no end.
Just from the insurance companies. Just the money that from the insurance companies they made.
Right. It's you know, the history of capitalism in the United States is a history that is playing out in the present, okay? And so, yeah, the insurance companies and all the other companies that benefited by stolen labor are still benefiting. One of the things that really brought it home for me was that story a year or so ago about how Georgetown University had finally acknowledged the sleazy, filthy, dirty things that the priests who ran the place had done to save the university. You know, they literally sold their slaves down the river, and the genealogical work was finally done, and they found them down in Louisiana, the descendants. They found the descendants in Louisiana. They had been slaves on a plantation in Maryland that was owned by Georgetown, and by extension owned by the priests of the Roman Catholic Church. And so Georgetown, to make amends, Georgetown said, well, we're going to try to do this right, and we will give preferential consideration to the descendants of those slaves if they want to come to school here at Georgetown. Well, cool. Are you going to pay for their schooling, too? Oh, no, we can't do that.
Mm-mm.
You going to give them free tuition? Oh, no, 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 no.
No, we're going to give them housing? Or?
No, not going to do. But we're going to take the names of the priests who sold the slaves down the river off the buildings.
Off the buildings.
But nobody's going to go to school at Georgetown. I mean, this is Georgetown, for God's sakes. We're a respectable institution. We can't be given the descendants of ex-slaves free admission to Georgetown. I mean, we give some scholarships away and stuff, but, you know, that's for deserving students.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know...
And it's the same thing up at Harvard. Yale's tied up in it.
Ivy League.
Well, yeah, but what the Ivy League and these elite colleges are, they are the nursery. They're the incubator of the mostly white power base of this country. And they are still running on the money that they made off of stolen labor.
Exactly.
You know, somewhere, and it is not a comparison. It's not even remotely comparable, but this is as close as I can get in terms of my history. There are little great 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 grandsons and great 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 granddaughters of the filthy ass coal barons who killed 100,000 coal miners in Appalachia, getting filthy rich. And those great, 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 great grandchildren are entering Harvard and Yale and Brown.
Yale.
And Dartmouth.
Princeton.
Princeton.
Wellesley.
All of them. Williams, Amherst, Stanford, Michigan. They're entering all of these great institutions because they have the financial ability to do so that was derived from, in some instances, the stolen labor of people in Appalachia.
And let's not forget the land from stolen from the original people.
Bingo.
That started out.
And this is not to say I don't love my country. I love my country. That's why we have to talk truth about our country, Tracy. Our country is a great big crime scene. It's a humongous heist. What about the railroad barons' progeny, who acquired their wealth on the backs of stolen labor from Asians imported from China to lay the rails in the West? How do you ignore that?
That's, you know, this is one of those things where you're thinking, until we get people in office and on school boards that want to teach the true history of the country, not this revisionist bullshit, not the stuff that, you know, what was it, the, not eminent domain, when they moved west.
Manifest Destiny, yeah.
You know, this was our God-given right as white people.
Mm-hmm.
To wipe out nations of people.
Funny how God keeps giving those rights to all the white people.
And it's like, you know, why can't, I mean, God, I'm a Christian. Do my people ever get the right to do stuff like that? No, I wouldn't want that right. But it's just, you know, like the line from that poem that Zora Neale Hurston's, like, it's called Dust Tracks on a Road. I am not tragically colored. There is no great sorrow dammed up in my soul, nor lurking behind my eyes. I do not mind at all. I do not belong to the sobbing school of Negrohood who hold that nature somehow has given them a low-down dirty deal and whose feelings are all hurt about it. Even in the helter-skelter skirmish that is my life, I have seen that the world is to the strong regardless of a little pigmentation, more or less. No, I do not weep at the world. I am too busy sharpening my oyster knife.
Ooh, that last. That last.
I am too busy sharpening my oyster knife. Zora Neale Hurston was a badass. She, you know, she was, you know, she, I love, I have like two, I mean, I have a bunch of heroes, heroines, but my two badass sisters, besides the obvious Harriet Tubman, but Zora Neale Hurston and Ida B. Wells. Because Ida B. Wells
was the first.
She was, you talk about Black Lives Matter. She was Black Lives Matter back in the day. Sister Girl was no
She got self. In people. She got up in people's faces. She made people confront the world that they were living in.
Yes. And she was the first, and she was the first to acknowledge, like a lot of black people then and now, when, you know, black people, you know, got in trouble, hung, or, you know, imprisoned or whatever, you know, lynched or whatever, she was one of those where obviously they did something wrong. They must have deserved it.
You know, every so often, the government, the Congress, will try to say something about lynching. And I don't know if you caught this recently. There's another bill, another resolution or whatever that's been introduced in the Senate, and only one Republican has signed on to it. The rest of them just can't quite bring themselves to.
No.
An anti-lynching resolution.
Ida B. Wells started to try in the 1800s?
Yeah. So we still can't accomplish it in 2018 because the only one member of the Republican majority in the United States Senate has been willing to sign on to an anti-lynching resolution. Just happens to be the only black member of the Senate in the Republican Party, Tim Scott of South Carolina. It's kind of embarrassing.
See, and Ida B. Wells, that was her thing, you know, until she, you know, that, you know, she was one of those black people, especially, you know, because she was born a slave and all that, that figured, well, obviously these people did something wrong. And when I say these people, black people, or they wouldn't, these things wouldn't be happening to them, you know, until her best friend and his, you know, business partners were lynched because they had the audacity to open a black-owned store that was more successful than the white store in the
Yeah, store. That got burnt out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
See, it reminds me, was it Wolf Blitzer? I'll have to check here because I don't trust my memory on it. But I think it was Wolf Blitzer who gave us the, and you know, this isn't ancient history.
No.
It was Wolf, was it Wolf? Yep, it was Wolf Blitzer.
Awesome.
And since you mentioned Katrina, there's a nexus with Katrina. Let's just go to Wolf talking about Katrina. We see video of an African-American man wading through the floodwaters. Take it away, Wolf.
Individuals continuing to do what we've been seeing for days now, simply walking through the water. We have to assume it's disgusting water and rapidly becoming disease-filled water, just trying to get to some location with what meager possession they have. We see that picture over and over and over again. As much as you see that picture, though, you simply get chills every time you see these poor individuals, as Jack Cafferty just pointed out, so tragically, so many of these people, almost all of them that we see, are so poor, and they are so black.
So poor, so
poor,
black.
So poor and so black.
I hope they put that on his tombstone.
It's so exhausting being black in this country.
Well, putting up with the sheer weight of stupidity, Tracy, has got to be exhausting.
It is. It just.
And when you recognize that any of these privileged people had their ancestors had to go through half of what African American ancestors had to go through, they never would have made it.
No, it's just like if men had to give birth.
Okay, I'll give you that one. but it's part of the root system, in as much as part of the mortifying fear of the white minority in the South was the recognition that they could not survive. They could not survive without the people who were carrying their asses through life.
They couldn't, and like you, it's just, well, it's just what happened when people first came here from Europe. You know, how many white folks died?
Oh, the minute you get south of what we now recognize as the Mason-Dixon line, that concept of seasoning took over.
Yes.
If you were white and you could last 2 years, you were said to be seasoned, and malaria and yellow fever were not likely to kill you. But you did not have the constitution to be able to work and do the brute physical labor necessary to build a society. There's not a brick or a stone that was laid in the South more than 150 years ago that was not laid by a person of color, a man of color mostly.
Yes.
Like I pointed out, Jack Daniel in Tennessee never distilled a drop of whiskey. A black man did it for him, and a black man taught him how. George Washington never brewed a barrel of beer, but George Washington was famous for his beer. But he never brewed a barrel of it.
Never. Well, like you said, if black people just got the money for the stuff that was stolen from us, you know, the descendants, like, you know, Jack Daniels and all these things, the cotton gin, you know, just anything.
But see, it's extended. And, you know, all of this comes about, this whole conversation comes about because of a dumbass maggot who used a racist dog whistle earlier today. But here's the funny part. Okay, it's not funny. Let's say we can't afford to pay for the stolen labor in this country. It would just break the nation. The stock markets would collapse. And there'd be atonal music in the streets. Okay, so how about we just apologize for stealing it? That's all. We just apologize. You know, there's a great majority of people, not that I can speak for them, but I would suggest that you know, an apology might be accepted, and it might be a way to begin healing. You know what? Racist white American culture doesn't want to do that either.
Nope.
Because that would be an admission that something was done that was viciously, morally wrong. And we live in a country where we can't even agree that a slave owner was in the wrong for owning slaves because he was noble and looked good in a gray fucking coat with a closely trimmed beard that some black guy trimmed, Robert E. Lee.
Because they sure as hell wasn't trimming their own shit.
No, hell no. Them boots weren't shiny and polished for going to Sunday go to meeting. Not by old Marse. And it goes all the way back. You know, James Madison was a surefire, no kidding, genius. And he only had the time to sit around and come up with the Constitution because he didn't have to work.
He didn't have to work.
He didn't have to work because he had a hell of a lot of other people working for him that he did not have to pay.
And when people, when they come up with that bullshit, when you call people out on slavery and the Civil War and how it was because of states' rights, it's like, no, you motherfuckers.
Well, no, it was about states' rights. It was about the states' rights to own slaves.
To own slaves.
I mean, how many different ordinances of secession do you have to read that says, oh, by the way, we're backing out of the Union here because of slavery? Apparently it's written in some sort of funny ink that I can read and you can read, but, you know, the sons of the old Confederacy, they've got this optical disease and they can't see that.
Yeah, no.
But at the risk of people hearing this as simply a digression, it isn't. Because
no.
What started a few hours ago with Ron DeSantis in Florida is merely the latest data point on the through line that runs hundreds of years into the past. And even the New York Times, I love this headline. No, I don't love this headline. Get this headline. On the DeSantis story, the New York Times headline reads, DeSantis warns Florida not to monkey this up, and many hear a racist dog whistle. Kind of headline writing is that? Many hear a racist dog whistle. Why not say some here and just go straight up full Fox-style handbook?
Right. Why not call it as what it is? And this is the problem. It's like when the media doesn't out and out call Trump a fucking lying piece of shit. Well, it can't say that, but you know what I'm saying.
Some are saying liar, but yeah. Here's a fun thing. Since let's just verge off into the a flight of fancy, shall we? Ron DeSantis is 39 years old, according to Trump, and he's done an extraordinary job. Harvard, Yale, great mind. Because see, you have to have a great mind if you went to Harvard or Yale.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to the Ivy League, you know, like Trump. Who claims to have graduated with honors from Penn, but no record of it exists whatsoever.
No record of it exists.
No.
Oh, and Wharton. Didn't he say he went to Wharton?
Yeah, Wharton. Yeah, Wharton School of Business at Penn. So here's the fun thing. Wouldn't it be interesting, and you don't even have to have Andrew Gillum in the room. Wouldn't it be interesting if there was a real live, honest to God, for-profit media journalist who actually knew the broad history and the pervasive and dense history of racism in the United States, and he could just sit and ask DeSantis how much he actually knows. Hi, Ron, you're from Florida. Tell me about Rosewood.
Yes.
What happened in Rosewood, Ron?
What happened in Rosewood?
How many people died in Rosewood, Ron? Where's Rosewood, Ron? And just go from there, because after all, he's been to Harvard and Yale, and surely to goodness, they teach that kind of stuff at Harvard and Yale. They've got a world-class history department. Oh, but there's the rub. You gotta actually take classes in that world-class history department instead of camping out in the goddamn business department trying to figure out how to squeeze a fortune out of the 16th decimal point of a fucking penny.
Absolutely. That you just said it in a nutshell.
And Andrew Gillum is a socialist. I mean, granted, he had the backing and support of the Bernie machine, and that's fine. This morning, before I had to head out on what turned into a day of errands, I caught a little bit of morning. Where the fuck is Mika?
Are we still on Mika watch? How many days is this?
Oh God, I figured it out this morning. He's keeping her in a pit, and he makes her have sex with him in a Reagan mask. She wears the Reagan mask.
Put the strap on.
You had to go there, didn't you? Ooh, Ronnie, fuck me like you fucked America. Ooh, Ronnie. But I in talking about Andrew Gillum's victory, and this was before the whole monkey it up comment was made. He said, Andrew Gillum scored a, I'm paraphrasing, Andrew Gillum scored a surprising victory in the Florida primary last night on his platform of, I don't know, how did he put it, with the support of black voters and Medicare for all. You know, fuck. And I had to get out the door, so I didn't have a chance. I couldn't even put together a tweet that sort of gathered that all together. How is it that Medicare for all is the first thing you mention after a black candidate's victory?
Right. Well, at least you didn't say food stamps for all.
Or 40 acres and a mule.
40 acres and a mule. You know, I mean, I'm still waiting for my 40 acres and a mule, but I'm just saying. Can we get the interest on that?
No. Can't even get an apology for not giving it to you. Sorry, this is America. You got to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
But what if I can't afford the boots, Bob?
Well, you gotta have initiative, and you gotta dig deep and find courage and character to get you some boots.
Well, you know, the problem is now that since most of the boots are now made in China with the tariffs, you know, that are coming down the pipe, I'm not going to be able to, definitely not going to be able to afford the boots now.
Nope.
What? What is?
Nope. We've had a couple of emails along the way. Jack in Shreveport writes and says, I recall that Michael Eric Dyson described some ideas on the subject of reparations in his book. In Tears We Cannot Stop, A Sermon to White America, out this week, Dyson doesn't sugarcoat what he expects from white brothers and sisters. He demands action, not just empathy. The book calls on all whites, urban and rural, to get involved, and Dyson even offers a list of ways to do so. You might start reading notable black authors. James Baldwin is a favorite. Create an individual reparations account or find another way to pay a secular tithe that helps young black people in your neighborhood. He even calls on whites with social media savvy to use their resources for good. If young whites were to tweet, for example, every time a cop let them off the hook for a minor infraction that a minority kid might have been punished for, it might help highlighting police disparities.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's so funny that he mentioned that book, because I'm in my office and I'm looking at all my books. And, of course, Michael Eric Dyson is that, and I'm looking at that book. He's like, oh, wow, which I haven't read yet. I just bought it when I saw it. But, you know, Michael Eric Dyson is amazing. Especially at that book that he wrote about President Obama, why he has to be who he is, when the whole Reverend Wright thing came out. When, you know, they were trying to disparage him about what Reverend Wright said about this country and how, President Obama. It kills me because Trump can support, you know, David Duke and any of these, you know, these evangelicals that, you know, are spewing hate. But, you know, because, you know, a black man tells the truth about this country, he's divisive and, you know, and all this.
Right.
And Obama had to walk away from the church.
Yeah, because of Jeremiah Wright.
Black. Yeah.
Well, see, I never had a problem with Jeremiah Wright's sermon because I had said something similar myself. Way, way, way back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, every time I would hear some Republican say, "And God bless America," I started saying, well, you know what? Maybe God forgive America might prove a little bit more effective.
Yeah.
Because if we're really going to buy into the Christian ethos, you got to engage in a little bit of repentance before you get the forgiveness part.
Yeah. Just like you said, if America just made amends, I mean, I don't know a lot about the 12 steps for, you know, an AA and stuff like that. But I know one of the steps, you know, you got to go through all these different
you
steps.
You did a searching inventory, and then you made amends. Those are two steps, I think.
And you make amends. Because until you make amends, until you admit
who you were when you were, you know, when you're doing drugs or when you were drinking, and the hurt and the pain and everything that you caused as a result of who you were, it's bullshit.
And see, within the, and I have a certain degree of skepticism for 12-step programs, just because they, the science doesn't bear out that they work. But they work for some, and that's a good thing. And that matters.
Right. It doesn't work for everybody, but as long as it works for somebody.
Yeah. Well, what John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night. But the thing about that searching inventory and the making amends, yes, it is an effort to, it represents an effort toward contrition and forgiveness by the people you've harmed, or from the people you've harmed. But it's also, as I understand it, a character-building exercise and a matter of healing your own wounds so that you don't have to walk around torturing yourself with them for the rest of your days while you're trying to recover.
Hey, you want to hear what Stephen King said about praise for tears we cannot stop?
Yeah.
This is what Stephen King had to say. Here's a sermon that is as fierce as it is lucid. It shook me up, but in a good way. This is how it works. If you're black in America, this is what happens, and this is how it feels. If you're black, you'll feel a spark of recognition in every paragraph. If you're white, Dyson tells you what you need to know, what this white man needed to know at least. This is a major achievement. I read it and said, amen.
Nice. Well, I confess I'm not the biggest Stephen King fan in the world.
But he hates Trump.
He writes, but he writes well, and I respect the brilliance of his talent.
And have you ever seen some of his tweets and trolling?
Oh yes. I mean, and you know, mainly I don't read a lot of Stephen King. I don't read a lot of Stephen King because I don't like being scared to death.
Because you don't like being scared. Because I think I was talking to you about something.
I don't do horror. I don't do horror movies.
I don't do
roller coasters.
Like, I can't watch that because I wish I could remember what it was. Something that I had been binge watching, and I asked you, had you watched it? And you're like, is it scary? It is not for me. I don't do scary. And I, you know, it's not for everybody. I used to be a Stephen King fanatic. I tell this story about the book It, and I told Alex this because the book came out before I was pregnant with him. And I used to work, you know, during the day I worked as a receptionist, doing temp work as a receptionist, and in the evenings I would work at Ralph's as a, you know, journeyman cashier, you know, union job. But I chose to do this because, you know, just for the extra money. But anyway, I was reading the book It. And, of course, this is before Kindle and, you know, all this. And I left the book at the office. And it was a Friday. And I was like, oh, my God. I was so into this book that I actually went and bought another copy of the book so I could read it over the weekend. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And
honestly, I was just thinking about the other day when the last time I actually read it.
You know, I don't mind a mystery or something like that where I'm trying to figure out what kind of nasty business got done. You know, how the body wound up in the dumpster or whatever. I'm okay, but it's the deliberate building of tension and suspense, and maybe it's because I've got enough tension and stress in my life as it is.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, because it even applies.
I haven't read King of the Round too.
There are comedies that make me cringe because it's a particular style of comedy that is born of deep embarrassment.
Ah.
And I'm like, you know, and then there's just some stuff I just flat don't get.
Well, there's that too. It's the stuff that my mom and my brother-in-law got into it that long ago because, you know, my mom is my mother, so you could only imagine. But when she does it, it's on with a, you know, with a Christian loving insensibility or what have you. I'm just vicious. But
my mom and I forget where they were. I think they went. They were at Disney World, and or Universal Orlando, I guess, wherever. But they went to Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville, you know, the restaurant, right? And my mother, being my mother, had never heard of Jimmy Buffett, right?
Oh no!
And of course, my brother-in-law was trying to like, well, why haven't you heard of Jimmy Buffett? And blah 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 blah, you know. And that's that white, you know, arrogance that, you know, just because you've heard of it and you think it's great, everybody's supposed to drink, think it's great. And my mom's like, well, have you ever heard of Shirley Caesar?
Who?
Exactly. She's like, basically that's what my mom says. She's like, Jimmy Buffett isn't important to whoever he is, not important to me. Jimmy Buffett's never done anything for me or anything like that. But Shirley Caesar, on the other hand, who you've never heard of. Because she's like, I don't take offense that you've never heard of Shirley Caesar. I don't think you're less than because you never heard of Shirley Caesar. But I have, and Shirley Caesar...
Oh, she tightened him right the hell up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of Shirley Caesar? Because, see, she's an amazing gospel singer. And, you know, just in case you've not, you know, so let me break it down who, you know, because he did, well, he's this and he's that, Margaritaville, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then she broke it down. Who asked him, well, have you ever heard of Shirley Caesar?
Exactly.
My mom thought,
and,
you know.
Yeah, that's righteous. There's no comparison. I mean, I'm not comparing. Did you look into tickets at the Greek Friday?
I have to work. So
oh.
That's the only reason. I have to work.
Oh.
I have to work.
Oh.
And
oh.
So, I would have loved to have gone, but I have to be up at the crack of dawn Saturday morning because of the nature of my work.
Well, so by the way, that's another Twitter account you want to follow, is Jason Isbell's.
Okay, I will.
He's got a great sense of humor, and B, he has a great sense of social justice.
I like people. See, and this is, and like you said, just those, you know, if white kids tweeted, actually, there was a while ago, I forget what happened, and there was, for a minute, a Twitter thing, I think the hashtag of driving while white, or something like that. I forget what it was, but it was a bunch of white people who, you know, basically, like, you know, suggested if every time you tweeted, every time, when a white kid gets off of something, and just by virtue of the fact that they're white, that if they were, you know, a black or brown kid, they would be in jail or dead or, you know, like I told you the story of one of those stories about my son when he was still in high school. And he used to work at this yogurt place called Humphrey Yogurt. And he usually worked the late shift. So he would be walking home at like 10 o'clock at night, you know. And that's my fault. I should have, you know, it was probably when I was in my.
Just to give you an idea, I just checked out Jason's timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Responding to a tweet from World Star Hip Hop. Your rap name is Young plus the last thing you spent money on. Jason Isbell responds, ooh. Young fruit for my toddler.
Awesome. Fruit for my toddler. There you go. Young fruit for my toddler. But what I was saying about...
Here's my, and you know, anybody who hates a Tom Cruise movie is bound to be my friend. Here's my unpopular opinion of that new Mission Impossible movie is a big old turd. We went to see it and left because the dialogue was like a porn movie without the porn parts. I'm telling you, there's some quality tweeting going on.
I'm going to have to check him out.
Hey, we've talked about such heavy stuff. Can I share some funny with you real quick?
Oh, please do. I like funny. Funny's always good.
You're a seafood aficionado. Oh, by the way. I had a lovely note from all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Subject line, Patch Adams.
Steve.
Bob, you're the Patch Adams of the radio world.
I feel better ever since you made me laugh my head off last night. And I don't even know what I said that was funny, but cool.
Because I listened to the show. I'm like, what did he say? Did I? Because maybe I, you know what? I didn't listen to the whole show because I was listening to it and I witnessed let me say this real quick. And it's going to be a good thing. Speaking of good things that make people smile, in spite of how it brought about it. I'm driving down the 101 yesterday, listening to your show because I had to, I had an hour and a half drive. I'm like, oh, good, I get to listen to the show. And I'm listening to the show, and out the corner of my eye, I see this truck flying down the freeway, and I'm like, what the hell? They're in the far right lane, and the next thing I know, they're on the shoulder, and all this dust is bellowing from underneath the truck, and it's just, and all of a sudden, the truck hits the side on the side of the freeway, and then it goes airborne and goes up over the embankment. I pull over to get, and because I had customers in the car, and I'm like, you guys stay in the car. And I run out, and I'm like, I just on instinct, and I run to where the truck is. And I go down the embankment, and this woman is stuck in her truck. So we pull open the, me and another woman pull open the door and get her off the car, out the truck. She doesn't have a scratch on her, except for this one little scratch. And, she's kind of out of it and everything. We're trying to figure out what was going on with her. But long story short, the good thing that happened, besides the fact that she wasn't hurt visibly, all these people, Bob, stopped to help. There was me, a black woman, a white woman, a Hispanic guy, a black man, a white guy. And knowing how self-centered and self-absorbed people are and just, generally giving a flying fuck about anybody, all of these people came together to help this woman. It didn't matter that she was white, because it was a white woman, but I didn't know what she was. I didn't care. She could have been
a human being who needed help.
She was a human being that needed help. But what shocked me is that I was so damn calm. I was like, okay, you call 911, tell them that we're at Call Box. And I didn't even know we still had call boxes out here in California. I'm like, tell them that we're at Call Box number this, and you do this. And then I just took complete charge of the situation. But just seeing all these people helping this woman out did something for my heart and my soul. Because it gave me hope that maybe we do have a chance, that maybe what's going on in this country is terrible, but maybe there's a group of people who still care about each other, and it doesn't matter, but we all stop to help another human being. So go ahead with your story. I just had to put that out because
I understand. And you know what? I thought of you, you being a professional driver and all. It was over a week ago now when Agnes and I were coming back from Summersville from the doctor's office, or the pharmacy. That's where we come back for. And the black bear ran out in front of me on the highway when I was doing 65 miles an hour. I mean, I learned some things. I learned that black bears respond to automobile horns and shrieking tires and brakes. And
they do. Okay.
They do, because that juvenile black bear turned around, went right back over the guardrail, went, I don't want none of that. Well, you got to say he's a black bear, yeah. Bob. Because we ain't got no goddamn grizzlies, that's why. but I thought of you, and I bet I could get props from Tracy for that. So
yes, you could, because and that was a crazy thing, because normally I drive like a bat out of hell, but just so happens that's one of the few times that I was driving that I was actually only going like 60, 65 miles an hour, which allowed me to pull over so I could help, because typically I'm driving so fast that I would have just gone flown past the accident. But it was just when I see, just like I said, just to see all these people coming together to help this woman, I don't know what happened to her.
Right, it gives you hope and lets you know that we may just actually be better than the maggots make it look like we are.
right, that people still care and that people, you know, care about each other and that, you know, there's more of us that care than the maggots. That's my eternal hope, Bob, that
well, there are more of us than them. It's just that it's just the power that they wield as a plurality that you can add to some go-along, get-along Republicans and wind up with something that smells like victory. Exactly. So anyway, I was going to share something funny with you. You're a meat eater and you love seafood, right?
Yeah. Very much so.
You like crabs?
Which ones? Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Remember I made gumbo. Remember right. I told you about my gumbo with the king crab legs.
Okay, so we're talking here about Maryland-style blue crabs. PETA, the asshole organization that euthanizes stray dogs and cats, put up a billboard in Baltimore, which is fresh, steamed, boiled crab central, and they're goddamn delicious. And it was a big billboard that says, "I'm me, not meat." So Jimmy's Famous Seafood got on Twitter and roasted him alive, posting a big picture of a big, big mess of crabs, and it just says, "Good morning, PETA." And some girl with pink hair responded, "Childish taunts are good for business, apparently." To which Jimmy's Famous Seafood responded, "Look, we won't give you hair advice, and you won't give us business advice. Cool? Cool." At which point some smart-ass hipster chimes in and says, "Pink hair is totally rad, dude." And they responded to him saying, "She's still not going to date you. A for effort, though. Rad effort." I mean, this may be the most epic burn down Twitter thread I've ever seen. Another dude comes after him and says, they go and look at his Twitter profile that's got pictures of his face with like a pig snout and pig ears on it. "Bro, you look like pig man. Quit writing paragraphs or we're going to serve you for brunch tomorrow." Yeah. And it goes on and on and on. They take down one guy for referring to this seafood shack as raping the earth.
Oh, my God.
And he said, and they replied, "Rape jokes aren't cool. After you hit puberty, come tweet us again and we'll give you a proper roast. Until then, remember, the boogeyman isn't real." At which point, dude's, "Rape jokes? There was no rape joke there. But your lack of basic comprehension can be forgiven working at Jimmy's. Also, I'm 30. I just have a killer moisturizer, one that doesn't harm animals. P.S. I live in England where no one's ever heard of Jimmy's Seafood Shack Bucket." They responded, "Better tread carefully or we'll give you the 1776 England treatment." "We ain't frightened of that. Have you seen the state of your country? Shooting black people in the streets, kids getting murdered at school, and locking kids in cages? No, you can keep yourselves, thanks." This kid was outclassed. They respond, "Don't forget, if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking and tough-tweeting German right now." And the thing just went on. I mean, just brutal. So, finally, a dude tweets, "Just finished this red-eye flight from Seattle to Chicago. I was sleepy as hell until I ran across the Jimmy Seafood repeatedly slaughtering PETA. I'm wide awake now. Hashtag open up shop in Chicago." This is where it just gets brutal. They respond, "If MJ comes out of retirement to play for y'all again, we'll come along as part of the package too." Dude replies, "How about Zach LaVine instead? Mike is 50-something and probably 250. To which they responded, how about, this is where you know that they're deep in their game. "How about you give us the $78 million you wasted on LaVine, and we give you free crab cakes for life?" To which he responds by posting a picture of Michael Jordan reaching out to shake somebody's hands. And then finally, LaVine tweets, because I guess he's been...
Oh, no, he got into the game, too. Oh, yeah, my God.
Plays for the Bulls. Tweets and says, "That's okay. I'm allergic to shellfish anyway." To which Jimmy Seafood responds, and defense too, apparently. Nothing left but a little pile of teeth. I mean, just, ooh, lightning bolt, pssst, greasy spot.
This is a grease spot.
And it all started because of, you know, because PETA's a bunch of assholes.
They're awful. I mean, I have no problems if you're a vegetarian and you have issues.
No, but don't tell me that you're out there saving animals and you're advocating for animal welfare when you've got a fleet of fucking euthanasia vans and you go around killing puppies and kittens.
I didn't know that. See, that pisses me off. Did you know that today would have been Michael Jackson's 60th birthday?
Yeah, I know. Isn't it wild to even contemplate?
I'm like, man. So, like, there's a couple of oldie stations out here that have been playing, you know, like an hour here and there of Michael Jackson. It's like, because I don't listen to a lot of Michael. I mean, I love Michael Jackson, but I don't listen to a lot of music like I used to or whatever. But when they play certain songs like "Blame on the Boogie" and this, I'm like, I forget how talented.
How awesome! Well, every now and then, I'll hear a cut off of my favorite Michael Jackson albums, "Off the Wall."
Yes.
Because it just happened to hit at the right time in my age group. And now, every now and then, I'll hear a cut off of that, and I'll be like, "Fuck, that just doesn't happen anymore."
No, we will never have, you know, another Michael Jackson. We will never have another Aretha Franklin. We will never have another Prince.
No,
you know, we will never, because it'll never happen again. Because
I mean, you get a little glimmer of hope every now and then. But you don't know if they got the staying power, you know, right. a Bruno Mars,
or Adele, or you know,
yeah, or Kendrick Lamar, or yeah,
right. You, like you said, there's glimpses here and there, but like you said, you know, in 20, 30 years, will people still be talking about Adele, or you know, Bruno Mars, or you know, or Kendrick Lamar? Will they still be people? You know, will people? You know, will people be lining
and you know, a big part of that, a big part of that, Tracy, know, for as much as we criticize the old recording studio industry system, they had the wherewithal to make people huge and to provide them with the resources to develop their talent. Now,
even though they stole them blind,
right, and stole them blind in the process, yes. But now your only hope is to record something and put it up on Instagram or SoundCloud or YouTube and hope that, you know, Justin Bieber, who is insanely wealthy now, was just a YouTube phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of that, and this is, you know, this is proof of my geezerhood, okay? I admit it. I could not tell you the title of a single Justin Bieber song.
Not a single song.
I know he's apparently a dick, but I don't know. A melody, nothing. Bupkis.
There's nothing. Well, it's like I just saw a thing that Ariana Grande is going to be singing at Aretha Franklin's funeral.
Well, okay, I guess.
But I'm like, you know, like she's another one. She's huge. She's famous. She's rich. I could not tell you one of her songs. Not one. Not a one. And like you said, I guess that we're at that. Because how old are you? 50, what, 4, 5? How old are you?
55, yeah.
Okay, because I'm 52, so we're not that far apart, you know? So we're...
No, you and Agnes are the same age. Apart.
Okay, so it's one of those things. We're looking at, you know, I think my music basically stopped in the 90s.
Yeah, but see, okay, in my own defense, I have kids, you know, your Alex is a little older than my kids are. Not a lot, but a little.
No, because he's 30.
And so I, well, okay, so he's the same age as our eldest. And, you know, our kids have not entered geezerhood yet, but the, you know, 30 is the danger zone.
Oh, no, Alex has already entered geezerhood because all these people that I just named, no. I mean,
well, but see, that's the thing. I can check in with any of my kids, and I can name off any of these names, and they'll be straight with me, and they'll be, nah, Dad, don't bother. It'll just make you mad. And that's some of that's a reflection on my geezerhood, but the other part of it is a reflection on the fact that even my own kids don't think they've got any damn talent.
No, and that's the thing about Alex. I mean, basically, my son is into, you know, jazz, like, you know, Sarah Vaughan and, you know, Miles Davis and Gil Scott-Heron and, you know, blah, 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 Nina Simone. I mean, that's the kind of stuff my son listens to, along with, you know, Aretha Franklin. My son is into the Altman Brothers. My son is into Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
And Led Zeppelin. And the Beatles. You know, that's who my son listens to. So this other stuff, he has an appreciation of music that outweighs anything, you know. Like, I think I sent you, right after Aretha died, this her version, because Alex asked me, well, have you ever heard Aretha Franklin do The Wait? And first of all,
that's pure power. With Dwayne Allman's right. Guitar in the background, damn.
Right. And so I didn't, you know, so again, he knows about music that I don't even know about. So he sent me, you know, the clip, and I sent it to you because I'm like, it was amazing. So we'll never have, I mean, did you ever hear, was it the Grammys, or speaking of Aretha Franklin, when she did opera?
No.
Placido Domingo. I thought I sent you that clip, but he was supposed to sing. Let's see, I'm going to look it up. Aretha does opera. Placido Domingo was supposed to sing at the Grammys or something. They had this whole big thing, and. He was supposed to sing Nusin Dorma. Once I heard it, I knew what it was. And he got sick at the last minute. So they're, you know, going through the audience of who can do it. They were going to ask Sting or whomever. And they were like, no, Aretha.
Wow.
She fucking
tore it, nailed it down and yeah.
And it didn't even give it, you know, they had no chance. It was just, and I know nothing about opera at all, but, you know, for her to, you know, I think she had like 2 hours to learn the song. And she just, she's Aretha. And, I mean, they had a full choir. It's I'll send it to you now, but it was just so amazing that, I mean, people, you know, of course you got a standing ovation because, you know, it's Aretha Franklin, but I mean, just because that's just who she was. I mean, like, we'll never have anybody like her again. Speaking of which, did she see pictures of her in her casket where she has on red?
I have not.
Change. But the first pictures of her, she's lying in a casket with her legs crossed with these red patent leather pumps on.
Ooh.
I mean, she looked good. She looked fierce. But I'm, you know, but when you get a chance, I just sent you the clip. But I think she did this in 2015. And this is during when she, because a lot of the stuff that she did in the last 3 or 4 years, she was sick, you know.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't talk about her
but
kids.
But they did a good job.
Yeah, yeah. So she, you know, so she, a lot of people didn't realize just how sick she was until she finally couldn't, you know, because of the cancer. But she's been, had been sick for a very long time. And, but, you know, she's like, no, this is, you know, you will not put my business out on the street. You will not. There was a couple of, I think she was being interviewed by Diane Sawyer. Diane Sawyer said something, and she's like, well, who told you that? Well, I've heard, and she's like, heard from who? Don't, that's not, you know, that's not what happened, and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it is what it is. Did we just, have we been talking when we went over the time?
We ran over a little bit, but we can do that now and then. That's okay.
Okay. But the I think I was trying to start when, you know, about the white kids or people tweeting about the stuff that they got away with being white. And I was talking about Alex. He was walking home, and he didn't tell me about this until years later. But on several occasions. Now, he has on his work uniform and everything. He had a work shirt that said Humphrey Yogart and a baseball cap that said Humphrey Yogart. He's walking home, and he said on a number of occasions he was harassed by the cops. And even on one occasion, thrown in the back of a police car, and the Indian restaurant that was down a ways down the street had been robbed. Now, the Indian restaurant was past our house and past, you know, where Alex was. But they, you know, so if he robbed the place, why would he be walking in that direction? I'm just saying. But anyway, so they pick him up, put him in the back of the police car, take him to the Indian restaurant and say, it was just the guy. And the owner or whoever worked there was like, no, not only was he not the guy, but he's one of our customers. His mother and him order from us on a regular basis. But just walking down the street and, you know, just the kind of stuff that any other person, again, that those things that as a white person, and you know, your son, you never had to worry about telling your son, well, now, I don't know now, but back, you know, that these talks that we have to have as black parents about, you know, how to approach, if the police approach you, what do you do, you know, and all these things that you don't, you know, that people of a certain hue don't have to worry about. But yeah. it's one of those things that I think about, and this is before, all this happened, thank God, before Trayvon Martin and, you know, Black Lives Matter and all this. I mean, so every day it's, you know, like, you know, about the things that as Black Americans we have to worry about. And, you know, like you said about reading James Baldwin, the thing that, you know, he said about being Black in America, if you're just remotely woke, as a Black person, there's a constant rage, you know, that you have to, you know, just, and you try not to let it consume you. But, you know, it's hard not to be consumed by it. It's hard. Okay, here it is. To be a Negro in America. To be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be in a rage almost all the time. But when we, you know, we can have, you know, when you have the white people screaming reverse racism and all this, that's okay. Because they've been so mistreated in this country.
Well, again, it's also because they're too delicate to survive.
Right. So there's that constant. Well, you know, like when a black man gets a, you know, those on those rare occasions that a black man gets a job, of, you know, like at the fire department, and the white guy didn't.
Right.
And it's not because the black guy was better, you know, smarter, more capable of having a job, any of these things, is because, you know, reverse racism and, you know, quotas and affirmative action, because it never enters into a person's, a white person's mind. Not everybody, but you know what I mean. That this black person, this black man, this black woman was better than you. They were more qualified than you. They could do the job better. So to make yourself, you know, they call us snowflakes, but, you know, so to make your little snowflaking ass feel better about yourself, well, obviously they got it because, you know, affirmative action.
Yeah, well, and that goes back to the essential mortal fear of ever having to admit responsibility. But Tracy, we do have to get out of here.
We do got to go.
But thanks for thanks for a delightful conversation on this prayer meeting Wednesday, and a couple of laughs along the way, and some very serious stuff too. I thank you very, very kindly. And sounds like Kimba's settled down, so everything's cool, right?
Yeah, she calmed down. No, yeah, because now I'm about to go make dinner. We're having arroz con pollo. And for you people that, you know,
chicken and rice. Yeah, I'll take seconds. I got to be careful with the rice because, of course, you know, starch, carbs, all that stuff. But hoo-wee, I love it. I do love it so.
I love rice. I'm using basmati rice.
And one of these days, you got to look up a recipe for, look up either low country or Gullah red rice.
Ooh.
It'll blow your mind, and it is so yummy.
I will do that.
There's some hog jowl involved.
Mm. Yeah. Hi, Kimba.
All right, Tracy, you have a good evening, dear.
You too, my dear. Later. Love you both. Talk to you later.
And it's time for us to get out of here. Ran over a little bit. Happens sometimes. But thank you, all of you, for joining in the program. Thank you so kindly to all of you who keep the program going. Special thanks this week to our sponsors who make this fundraising free week of radio possible. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy, and midweek pinch hit chat room, utility chat room moderator. Thanks to Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Later, y'all.